It's October, which means it's time. 31 days, 31 podcasts.
31 days, 31 podcasts.
31
podcasts.
31 podcasts. It's Elfoso and Otto Wien.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to October 2nd of Potoween, our second show already. Can you believe it goes so fast? So today I was going to talk to you about a little film I saw called Phantasm. Now, Phantasm is from 1979, and it is allegedly a horror movie. I say allegedly because, so I watched this movie. I'm not entirely sure what happens. So here's how this episode is going to go. I'm going to tell you what I think happened, and then I'm going to look up the plot and what actually happened, because I think that my version can't possibly be true. So I'm going to say this too. Spoiler alert for Phantasm, but I don't recommend watching Phantasm because it's not very good. So if you're wondering about whether or not to watch or not watch a movie, I would go ahead and skip that one. There's got to be something better from 1979. Okay, so let's do the Peter version first, and then we're going to see how closely it matches up with what actually happened. Now I'm going to skip a bunch of shit because Phantasm, like a lot of these older horror movies, is fucking slow as fuck. Now, I think one could attribute this to, a newfound lack of patience on the part of viewers. But I think there's something else, too, which is that I honestly feel that these older movies, these horror movies could be a lot slower, because if I wasn't familiar with the idea of what a horror movie was and how this worked, right, I could be sitting there the whole, like, the slowness of it is to its advantage because I don't know what's happening. So it's got a little bit more leeway in terms of like a creeping horror. Whereas today, having seen a lot of movies of this type, you can't do that the same way. Like I know when I watch a horror movie, that it's a horror movie. So I have certain ideas of like, well, okay, when do we get to the horror? There are a few movies I watched in preparation for this month, and I would say that this is a theme amongst older horror. Okay, here's the movie. When's the horror coming? All right. So I'm gonna relate this as best I can remember. Phantasm opens. We're in a bar. A guy gets picked up by a babe, and they go to have sex in the graveyard. Halfway through the sex, it flashes and is the guy we'll call the tall man. I think that's what he's called in the movie, and he's kind of the bad guy. Turns into the tall man, stabs the guy, kills him, and that's that. Now, I think what happens is then we have an older and a younger brother, and I think what happened is that the tall man stabbed this guy who was a friend of the older brother. Now, as the movie started, I thought the older brother was like back in town for this funeral and was going to leave because the younger brother kept talking about like, he's going to leave again or something. And everyone's like, he's not going to leave. But it turns out that I guess the older brother was like the caretaker of the younger brother, which made it even weirder that he was saying he's going to leave, but whatever. They go to the funeral. Nothing really happens except, the older brother's walking around this weird funeral home. And then he's saying, the tall man shows up and is like, the funeral's about to start, sir. And you're like, all right. So he goes out, sees the funeral, whatever. Now, the younger brother is there like spying on the funeral. The younger brother is basically a creep and is just following his older brother around all the time. And sees the funeral happen, and then he's hanging out in the graveyard on his motorbike. and he sees the tall man pick up a coffin that's got a guy in it and just like, you know, I'm trying to think of how I would describe this. Sort of like how Arnold Schwarzenegger just carried that entire tree in Commando. Probably not helpful. I'm guessing if you haven't seen Phantasm, you may not have seen Commando. That seems like a crossover to me. Imagine how you would carry, just like under your arm, you would just kind of put your arm around the coffin and put it up against your hip. And he just kind of heaves it into the hearse and slams the door, which I was like, well, I guess that's concerning because he's very strong, but it didn't seem supernatural. It did seem super cockish. I mean, fucking funeral home. I would think they'd be a little more respectful than that, but whatever. And then the kid sees this, freaks out, gets on his motorbike, and he's driving it through the cemetery, which I was like, well, should you really be like tearing ass through the gravestones? The tall man sort of looks at him, a sound effect happens, the kid goes flying off his bike, but he's fine, and then he leaves. Then a bunch of nonsense happens, and then the younger brother follows the older brother. The older brother goes to the bar, he picks up a woman who's the same woman who stabbed the friend, but no one knows that. They go to the graveyard to have sex, and then the younger brother gets attacked by what I'm going to describe as a dwarf, because that's what they call it in the movie. It's a cloaked small figure. So then the younger brother goes running past where they're having or about to have sex on the graveyard, or on a grave. I mean, they're not just in a graveyard, they're on a grave. Now, if somebody picks you up in a bar and is like, let's go have sex in a graveyard, be suspicious. All right? I shouldn't have to say that, I feel. I feel I shouldn't have to say, you should be suspicious of someone who wants to bang you in a graveyard. But you should be suspicious of that, especially if you just picked up this person. So the younger brother goes running by. This is one of my favorite parts because the older brother's like, oh, wait here, and goes running after the younger brother. And this lady's just like laying on this tomb and, you know, just sort of like, all right, I guess I'll just lay here ostensibly half naked or something. Chases the younger brother. Younger brother tells him about these dwarves and he's like, I don't believe you. So then the next day, the younger brother breaks into the funeral home and gets chased around by the tall man. And the tall man deploys what I can only describe as a giant pinball, which almost hits the younger brother, but hits another guy in the face. And then it has a drill coming out of it that drills into the guy's head, and it has a hole in the backside, so blood comes shooting out of the back. So this was like the first awesome horror-y thing that had really happened, right? Somehow, oh, there's also like a fortune-telling scene that I don't know what the fuck that had to do with anything. Then the younger brother somehow gets like chopped off some fingers of, I think it's the tall man. Brings them home, and they're like oozing out this mustardy blood. Shows them to the brother, and then the brother's like, okay, I believe you. Also, there's a friend who is driving an ice cream truck. Okay, so they all go to have a confrontation with the tall man. There's a lot of shit that happens in there. There's like a hearse that they think is driving itself, but it's being driven by one of the dwarves. And it turns out one of the dwarves is the friend they had who they just went to his funeral. But he's in this dwarfen body and his face is all fucked up. But there he is. So long story short, they get to the funeral home. They go in this back room and it's filled with these black canisters. They're like the size, not like a 55-gallon drum, like maybe a third of that. What's a third of 55? Let's say your average drum was a 66-gallon drum. This would be a 22-gallon drum that appear to have like a little eye slot in them so you could look into them or look out. And then there's these two posts in the room, and the younger brother discovers he like goes through the posts and like his hand disappears. So he looks through, And when he looks through the posts, he sees what I can only describe as a giant line of these dwarves pushing, rolling these canisters, you know, like one at a time in a straight line across the horizon to no clear purpose, effect, or goal. Now, a lot of things are bothering me about this movie at this point. Like, I don't know what's happening. I think somebody said that they think this is another planet or dimension, and the gravity's higher there, and that's what turns people into dwarves. Which I'm like, I don't think that's how that works, but okay. I thought the people were in the canisters, but they're also the dwarves. I'm not sure what the purpose or end game is here. I'm not sure how the tall man fits in with all this. There's a lot I'm not sure about. But something that pissed me off is this. You make a dimensional gateway or a gateway to another planet. On the Earth side, it's about 5 feet away from these canisters. It's as close as you can get to the canisters, you know, in a storeroom. On the other side, it appears that they're rolling these canisters like 100 miles. I mean, they're just rolling them into the horizon and you can't see where they're going or what's going on with them. Why would you build the gate on that end so fucking far away from what you wanted? You know what I mean? So far from the destination. I mean, you're traveling interdimensionally or across the universe. You couldn't build it 100 miles closer. So they escape, you know, the funeral home. The ice cream man friend sees a hot babe laying out in the grass inexplicably. Runs up to her. Of course, it's the tall man in disguise. Stabs him. He dies. The younger brother is being chased by the tall man. At some point, they discuss this plan of tricking him into falling into a mine shaft, which I don't know why. I mean, there's no discussion of like, well, he's super strong. They also see this picture of him that's from, you know, like old timey times. So you're like, he's like a super strong immortal with this deadly pinball and whatever. I don't know. This doesn't seem like a great idea. I think someone shot the pinball and it exploded. And the tall man is chasing the younger brother through the woods. The younger brother just inexplicably leaps across, you know, a dirt patch. And the tall man, I guess, is a fucking moron, runs, falls into the shaft. And then the older brother triggers some kind of avalanche up a hill nearby and a bunch of rocks tumble and cover the opening to the mine shaft. Cut to the younger brother's in his bedroom. He wakes up. The friend who had gotten stabbed is there, still alive. And the younger brother mentioned something about his older brother. And the guy who got stabbed was like, I don't know why you're like this. Your older brother has been dead for a really long time. And, you know, whatever. None of these crazy things happened with the tall man. Then the younger brother is like, this can't be happening, walks around the room, a mirror shatters, the tall man's there, and a bunch of dwarves like drag him through the mirror, and that's the end. I have a lot of questions about Phantasm. Basically, what the fuck was going on? Like, what is going on with the canisters? What's going on with this? Now, the problem I have with Phantasm is that it was an hour and a half long. If Phantasm was 35 minutes long, it would be the best movie ever. Because they'd be like, no time to explain. We're just going to show these crazy visuals. We have this weird pinball that's going to drill in a guy's head and shoot blood out. And we just, you know, we kind of just show you from the perspective of these characters, like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I also didn't understand the ending. I understood the ending of, like, the tall man and the dwarves are dragging him through, because it's like, that's how every old horror movie ended, right? From Freddy dragging What's-Her-Face through the little hole in the door, all that shit. They always had to end with, like, or is he dead? What I don't get is what the purpose of the ending was in terms of, like, your brother's been dead the whole time. Because I was like, oh, is this like all a manifestation of his fear of death? But then it's like, I guess not, because there's the tall man. But mostly my questions are related to what the fuck was going on with the canisters and the dwarves. So I have the IMDb summary. So now let's go through this and see how closely it matches up and if we can get some answers. In the opening scene, an attractive blonde woman wearing a lavender colored... Okay, this is already way too deep. Is it important to know that it's a lavender dress? Wearing a lavender colored dress is making out with a man in a local cemetery, which suddenly ends when the woman pulls out a dagger and stabs the man to death. So far, so good. Meanwhile, 24-year-old musician Jody Pearson is raising his 13-year-old brother Mike. Oh yeah, they had a little jam session on the porch. It was horrible. In a small Southern California town disturbed by the mysterious deaths of its citizens. Reggie, a family man and ice cream vendor, I had no idea he was a family man, joins the brothers in their suspicions that the local mortician dubbed the Tall Man is responsible for the deaths. Okay, I didn't pick up on that, but fine. Mike relays his fears to a fortune teller and her granddaughter about the possibility of Jody departing and leaving him in the care of his aunt, along with his suspicions about the Tall Man. Mike is shown a small black box and told to put his hand into it. After the box grips his hand, Mike is told by the granddaughter not to be afraid, and as the panic subsides, the box relaxes its grip. The notion of fear itself as the killer is established and is what propels Mike towards his final confrontation in the film with the Tall Man. Okay, I did not get that at all. Fearing that Jody will abandon him, Mike follows him one evening to a local bar where he sees him pick up the woman in the lavender from the opening scene and follows them to the Morningside Cemetery where Jody and the woman make out with each other. Just then, Mike is scared from his hiding place when a small figure wearing a brown robe jumps out at him. Jody, alerted by Mike's scream, finds him and angrily tells him to go home. When Jody returns to the makeout spot, aka grave, the mysterious woman in lavender is also gone. That was a good part, too, because he was like, that's my brother, because he heard his cowardly scream. Mike begins, so far, so good, right? I feel like we're on track. Mike begins to have horrifying nightmares about the Tall Man and his dwarf-like minions and determines that something is going on at Morningside Mortuary. At this point, Mike is like, something's going on. After an encounter when he is pinned under a car, when one of the dwarfs drops a car on him while he's working in the garage, Mike decides to investigate. Yeah, that happened, I guess. The next evening, he goes out armed with a hunting knife to Morningside Mortuary and breaks into the building through a basement window. He just, like, kicks out this window. It's loud as shit. Mike hides when the Tall Man and the cemetery caretaker are seen. Walking down a long hallway at the mortuary, Mike encounters a flying silver sphere about the size of a softball coming right at him. The caretaker appears and grabs Mike as the flying sphere comes right at him. Mike ducks in time as the sphere hits the caretaker and drills into his head, spurting out blood. Mike then encounters the Tall Man, who chases him to the basement, where Mike manages to sever some of the fingers of the Tall Man's right hand. Again, the right hand. Mike escapes from the mortuary and from the two of the Tall Man's brown-robed dwarf minions and runs for home. All right, so far I feel like we're still on track. The next morning, Mike shows Jody the severed finger of the Tall Man, which is still twitching with life and bleeding yellow embalming fluid. Oh, is that what that was? Which Mike is keeping in a small box. When Reggie comes over and Mike shows them the severed finger, it transforms into a large wasp-like insect, which attacks the three of them, but Jody manages to kill it by shoving it into the kitchen garbage disposal. It takes like two tries too. He kind of stuffs it in there, and then looks down in there, and the bug is just sitting there, and you're like, okay. But they were like, what should we do with it? I know, put it in the disposal. It's like, just fucking smash it. The next evening, Jody goes to Morningside Mortuary to investigate, armed with a .45 caliber pistol, but he is immediately attacked by one of the brown-robed dwarves in the mortuary basement, forcing him to run. Jody runs into Mike outside the cemetery, driving their car, when they are chased by a hearse being driven by one of the dwarves. Jody opens fire on the hearse with his shotgun. Oh yeah, that was good too. They were doing like one of those... you drive, I'll shoot. And he's like shooting at this hearse with no one apparently behind the wheel. And it was like, you're going to just shoot a ghost car? I mean, how is that going to work? Forces it off the road. Upon examining the dwarf driver, the two brothers are shocked to find that it is a former friend of theirs, murdered by the woman in lavender in the opening scene, now crushed down to small size. Jody and Mike call Reggie, who takes the still-alive body of their friend, into Reggie's ice cream truck while Jody drops Mike off at the local antique store. There, Mike finds an old photo of the tall man in a 19th century photo during the founding of the town. Mike asks the two young store workers, Sally and Sue, to drive him home. During the drive, Mike tells them to stop the car when they see Reggie's overturned ice cream truck lying beside the road. Mike looks around and finds that the creature dwarf has escaped and Reggie is nowhere to be found. Just then, a group of dwarfs attack Mike and the girls, who take control of their car and drives away when Mike falls out the rear window. Okay, so, yeah, and I'm not sure why they took this dwarf and put it in the ice cream truck, but there you go. Mike goes home and tells Jody about Reggie's disappearance and about the recent attack. Jody decides to go back to the mortuary to look for Reggie and the two girls, and Mike wants to come along, but Jody instead locks him in his room, feeling that it would be too dangerous. Now, this was a crazy part, too. Mike, using a buckshot shell, manages to disable the lock on his door and takes a pistol from the house to meet up with Jody, but the tall man is waiting for him outside with his hand fully healed and forcibly takes Mike into his waiting hearse to drive back to the cemetery. Mike manages to shoot out a tire from the car as it arrives at the mortuary, which goes out of control. Mike manages to jump out of the car before it hits a tree and explodes with the tall man still inside. Mike is a real manager, managing a lot. He, like, taped a shotgun shell to a hammer and used it to blow the door open, which I was like, I mean, this is like inside a house. It's probably like a hollow core door. You can just kick that shit down. You don't need to blast a shotgun hole in it. All right, we're almost there. Inside the mortuary, Jody is breaking into a crypt of his parents to find if their bodies are still there. Okay. Mike enters the building minutes later and sees his parents unearth coffins, and upon opening one and finds they are empty. Mike runs and has another encounter with the lethal flying silver sphere until Jody shows up and destroys the silver sphere with a blast from his shotgun. The two brothers then encounter Reggie, who claims that he made it to the mortuary and has been hiding in a coffin for the past few hours. Reggie also claims to have found the missing girls in a room and freed them. Okay. So that's solved. I guess I did wonder, I was like, what happened to those girls? And it's like, oh, they're gone. Okay. Great. That happened off screen. Wink. Mike, Jody, and Reggie then go into another room, which is a large open area filled with storage barrels containing several dwarves, as well as two long poles, which upon close examination is the gateway to an alien planet. Mike is briefly sucked through, but saved by Jody and Reggie, who pull him back. Mike realizes that the tall man is using the corpses as slaves to his alien planet, and they have to be crushed to small size because of the planet's intense gravity and heat. When the lights in the building go off, Mike disappears and Jody sets off to find him. Okay. So they put... Okay. Here's what I have to assume with given all of this information. And when I say information, that is in the quotest, hugest quotation marks of all time. Dead bodies are put into the canisters. The canisters are taken to the alien planets. They have some procedure there on the planet that crushes them down, because being crushed down allows them to survive the climate of this planet. And that's about as much as I get. Still, they're slaves on his alien planet, but like doing what? I mean, what are the slaves doing? Other than, it seems like, rolling more canisters and making more slaves, I guess. There's nothing on the planet. It was like this desolate desert planet. Okay. Alone in the small room, right? Now, I also want to point this out. Like, this whole room is in there. This is one tiny paragraph in this entire thing, which I was like, well, this is like the big reveal of the movie. But it's insane. Alone in the small room, Reggie decides on a gamble to shut down the humming two-pronged gateway by slamming his hands on the tops of the poles, creating a vacuum which he barely escapes. Outside the mortuary, Reggie encounters the woman in lavender, who stabs him to death with the dagger. Mike and Jody come upon the scene and discover the woman in lavender, who changes into the tall man, yet another replica. No fucking shit. Mike and Jody are forced to run as the mortuary glows and is apparently destroyed. I wish sometimes IMDb summaries and it said no fucking shit. Back home, Mike and Jody, distraught over the death of... Wait. Okay. Back home, Mike and Jody, distraught over the death of Reggie and that the entire town is either dead or consumed by the gateway vacuum, plot on a way to stop the tall man by trapping him in a mine shaft, since there seems to be no way of killing him. While Jody sneaks out of the house, no one shot him. Jody sneaks out of the house to go to a remote area near a mine shaft to prepare the trap. The tall man arrives at the house and attacks Mike, who's forced to run. The chase leads to the mine, where the tall man falls through a fake ground into the hole and to the bottom, where Jody pushes a large boulder to seal the hole, thus trapping the tall man. After doing so successfully, Mike suddenly wakes up with a start in his house. Mike is next seen lying by the fireplace with the alive and well Reggie sitting next to him. Reggie tells Mike he was simply having a bad dream, something that has been a common occurrence since Jody died in a car crash a few weeks earlier. Mike realizes that Jody is indeed dead, as well as his parents, all of whom died in the car accident, and the whole thing with the tall man was nothing but his horrible nightmare. Reggie suggests that they go away for a while, and Mike agrees. Mike goes into his room to pack his stuff, where the tall man is waiting for him behind his door. After Mike is shocked to see the tall man behind his door, several arms of the dwarf minions pull Mike through his bedroom window as he screams. Okay. So, we got a slightly different story about the canisters and the planet, which I guess consisted almost entirely of, well, he shrinks them down because then they're better slaves on this planet. It doesn't really say why, but it just says that this is true. We also got it. The ending is like I thought, but worse to me, because here's the thing, right? It's like, okay, your parents and your brother died in this car crash. And, you know, you've been having these dreams about the tall man. It's all your horrible nightmare. But then it's not his horrible nightmare. That's happening. But so if that's happening, why isn't the... Are the parents and Mike dead? Or Jody? Joey? Whoever? Joey? Ross? Rachel? Who's dead? Who's alive? Also, I mean, this is like, that's the worst ending you can do, right? It was all a dream. I mean, there's nothing worse than that. It was all a dream. Okay, good one. You could end any movie with the ending of Phantasm. A kid wakes up with a start in his house, and then, you know, this guy is there and he's like, you've been having these crazy ass dreams. I mean, you could just make Hero Dreams of Sushi and then end it, just splice in the last 5 minutes of Phantasm. You could have Titanic and just splice in the last 5 minutes of Phantasm and been like, you've been dreaming about that all the time since your parents and your brother died. You could literally end every single movie like this. I would love it if someone did that, if they just went through their movie collection and they're like, what if every movie ended with Phantasm? Wouldn't that be fantastic? I guess that's when you got to see, because I said it phantastic. Okay, well, turns out I'm not as big an idiot as I thought, other than the fact that I watched Phantasm. Do not watch Phantasm. But do watch Phantasm 2, because I'm curious if there's more story here that I missed, and maybe it's illuminated in Phantasm 2. All right, everybody. Well, that's October 2nd. We'll see you on October 3rd. Stay spooky.